Welcome to Native America Calling. From Studio 49 in Albuquerque, I'm Tara Gatewood. From one side of the continent to the other, eagles and their feathers are sacred to many tribes. Yet U.S. federal law says only members of federally recognized tribes can possess them. That leaves many with Native heritage out of the circle, including dozens of state-recognized tribes who aren't supposed to have feathers in their possession. What do you think about regulations on who can and can't have eagle feathers? We hope you'll join us for this discussion right after National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Alaska Native leaders and community members voiced concerns to Interior Secretary Sally Jewell during her visit to Alaska this week. Matthew Smith reports on her visit to a coastal community.
His dad taught him how to hunt and work on snow machines, motors.
Becky Norton has lived in Kivalina all of her life, and she's seen firsthand what erosion has done to the small community on a barrier island between the Chukchi Sea and the Kivalina River.
My husband built as a cabin 8 miles upriver, about 30 feet away from the bank. And the bank where we are, it's pretty high. And this summer, it fell into the river.
Becky's cabin and more destruction linked to changing sea levels and a warming Arctic took center stage at a presentation for Interior Secretary Sally Jewell. Speakers, including a group of four students, outlined the community's concerns, namely ongoing erosion, building a new school, and the need for an emergency evacuation road. All told, the school and the road alone could cost up to $100 million. Solving the erosion issue, millions more. Jewel listened, made introductions, posed for photos, before hopping in the back of a pickup truck for a tour of the village with tribal president Millie Howley.
This is the home that's in danger of falling into the lagoon until they put the rock revetment up.
And they put that on the outside there?
Yeah, on the outskirts. You can't see it from it because it's all covered with snow.
Who did that?
Corps of Engineers, okay.
She saw the charred remains of the community's only store, which burned down in December, the home sinking into the frozen rivers, the brown tundra and jumbled ice that even now looked more like breakup than midwinter. Her time in Kivalina was brief, with every minute scheduled to keep her busy until her departure. But Jewel says it was worth it to see things firsthand.
It's hard to understand the impact in the abstract. When you see it up close, you really get a much better feel for the passion, the fear, the importance to culture and lifestyle that is all at risk here.
A new school, existing erosion plans from the Army Corps of Engineers, and more. All things, Jewel says, need to be part of the discussion when she goes back to Washington. Kivalina Tribal President Millie Howley says the secretary's visit was brief, but in the end, she thinks a success.
I feel like we've done the job. Yeah, I think that was the main purpose, and we've done a good job.
As for Becky Norton, whose family cabin fell into the river, she says just how good a job the community did will be determined by what Jewel does next.
It all depends on how she takes it, you know, and pass it on to wherever it needs to go to get us help.
And she says to Governor Bill Walker and other lawmakers who came to the Northwest Alaska community to meet with Jewel, finding money for the community's new school and road could happen if they want it. I'm Matthew Smith.
Meanwhile, people across Alaska are remembering the contributions of dog musher George Atla, who died of cancer Sunday at the age of 81. KUAC's Dan Bross has more.
George Atla Jr. was dominant in sprint mushing for much of five decades, including years before the Iditarod, when sprint racing was the sport's primary focus and the competition was fierce. Atla won 10 Fur Rendezvous World Championships in Anchorage and 8 Open North American Championships in Fairbanks. With a laser focus, he described in a 2013 interview.
I didn't go to the race for any other reasons except to win.
Atla had deep roots in the sport with a leg damaged by tuberculosis. The young Atla used dogs for racing and subsistence activities like fur trapping. Atla attributed some of his racing success to community support and a lineage of great dogs from the Koyukuk River region. George Atla will be buried in his home village of Hooslia Thursday.
That was Dan Bross reporting, and I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanak Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation. With funding from ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company. And by the law firm of Sanosky, Chambers, Saxe, Miller & Munson, advocating Native American interests throughout the United States, with offices in New Mexico, California, Alaska, and Washington, D.C. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
This is Native America Calling. I'm Tara Gatewood. Today we are opening up our electronic talking circle to talk about who can and can't have eagle feathers and parts under the law. In brief, current federal laws limit the ability to possess eagle feathers and parts to members of federally recognized tribes. It's been that way for some time. In the past few years, there has been movement on this issue in what government officials call expediting the process of requesting eagle feathers and parts. In 2012, the Justice Department announced a new policy on the prosecution and possession of eagle feathers. And there have also been court cases that have challenged just who has the right to have eagle feathers and parts, including one that made headlines this past summer that some call a slight victory for state-recognized natives. Despite the different advancements in the laws and regulations on eagle feathers and parts, there are still many who feel they've been left out of the circle, including Native people who are not enrolled in a federally recognized tribe. And we'll hear more about this in just a moment. And we also want to hear from you today and who you think should have the right to have eagle feathers and parts. And do you think it's fair to exclude state-recognized tribes from having a legal right to possess eagle feathers? Also, what kind of hurdles do the current laws on eagle feathers and parts present for natives who are of mixed heritage or have several tribes but can't get enrolled? Is this your story? We want to hear from you too. Join our conversation. We want to know what you think. Our number is 1-800-996-2848, and you are also welcome to call in anonymously. We'll take your call. Also, if you feel the laws in place are solid and are what are needed, call in and tell us why. All opinions are welcome. And do you feel they protect your Native way of life? Again, the number to participate is 1-800-99-NATIVE. And joining us now from Billings, Montana, is Gerald Gray, chairman of the Little Shell Tribe. We want to go ahead and welcome him back. Welcome back, Gerald.
Thank you for having me back.
And Chairman Gray, it's great to have you on the line with us today. And we're talking about eagle feathers. And when you think of members in your tribe and the laws that exist when it comes to possessing eagle feathers and parts, you know, what's your biggest concern?
Well, my biggest concern is that we have the federal government basically stepping on our religious freedoms in terms of how we utilize the eagle and the eagle feather in our ceremonies.
And so, Gerald, you know, when you take a look at the different laws, you know, what kind of message is being sent to you and your tribe, being a state-recognized tribe?
Well, I mean, that's the whole gist of it for us is when you have the federal government basically setting the precedence of saying who can have these and who can't, but yet we're a state-recognized tribe in which that we're a sovereign nation as seen in the eyes of the state of Montana.
And your tribe also has a special story, too, that, you know, recognition has, you know, two sides to it. You've seen a day where you were on the right list and then another day you weren't. Any thoughts about how specific or how unique your tribe's position is when we come to a law like this that says a state recognized tribes can't have eagle feathers.
Well, yeah, I think that with us, we're on the border of becoming federally recognized, and like you said, in 2000, given a preliminary finding of you meet all the requirements, and then taking it away 9 years later, from 2000. Well, earlier than that, to 2000, we're able to use eagle feathers and have that opportunity like all the other federally recognized tribes, and then all of a sudden you can't. It infringes on our right, with our ceremonies.
And Gerald, how significant are eagle feathers or either eagle parts to members of the Little Shell tribe?
They're very significant in that we use them in our ceremonies, both religious ceremonies, whether it be Sundance or Sweat, and then also they're used in some of our naming ceremonies. So they're very significant. Today we use it. We have an eagle staff that we have at all of our ceremonies meetings. We're transferred this past summer the Thunder Pipe bundle from the Turtle Mountain Tribe to the Little Shell, and that also, we use eagle feathers in that ceremony when that bundle's opened up in the spring. And we also have a lot of Little Shell members that are dancers on the powwow circuit. Their regalia has eagle feathers on them, so it's very significant and important to us.
And Gerald, what has been the case? Have members from your tribe been cited for having eagle feathers?
No, they haven't, and we're thankful for that. But I don't think it's high on the list of federal government to make it a priority to come after our members, for having these feathers for definitely our religious ceremonies and powwow dancing and those kind of things.
All right. And Gerald, anything else you'd like to share about, how this may affect other state tribes?
I think it affects all state tribes, but I do think that the federal government needs to get out of this business and let the states decide whether each specific state tribe should be able to have or obtain these eagle feathers for whatever purposes they see fit.
All right. Thanks for that. And Chairman Gray, you're going to hang out with us this hour. Again, if you'd like to join the conversation, got a question, you can call in and ask. Give us a call, 1-800-996-2848. I'd like to go ahead and introduce two more guests to the hour. On the line with us, we have Steve Oberholzer, and he is the special agent in charge of the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Services Office of Law Enforcement. Welcome back to Native America Calling, Stephen.
Thank you. Glad to be on the show.
Thanks for joining us. And also with us, I'd like to introduce another voice from Commerce City, Colorado, is Colleen Schaefer, and she is the supervisor at the National Eagle Repository, and she's here with us today. Welcome, Colleen.
Thanks very much for having me.
All right, and great to have you both here. Well, let's go ahead and just go over some of the basics. Maybe some folks are hearing about, the laws and regulations for the first time. Let's start with, a simple one. Under the law, who can possess a eagle feather or eagle parts? Please help us with that, Steve.
Sure. And I think a lot of this depends on when the bird died. The Bald and Golden Eagle Protection Act dates back to 1940 to protect bald eagles and 1962 for golden eagles. So any eagles that were lawfully taken prior to those dates can be possessed by anyone in the United States. They can't be bought, sold, imported, exported, etc., but they can be possessed. And eagle feathers from those birds can be possessed as well. After those dates, enrolled members of federally recognized tribes can lawfully possess eagles and eagle parts from both species.
All right. And Colleen, anything you'd like to add?
No, except for the fact that the National Eagle Repository was established in the early 1970s to provide a way for Native Americans to acquire the eagle feathers for the religious purposes.
And Colleen, you know, when you are taking questions from people, what are some of the biggest ones you get, especially from Native America?
I would say it's the wait list. Right now there is a long wait time for either a whole eagle or parts thereof. And that basically just boils down to demand exceeding supplies, especially for golden eagle requests. They seem to have applicants that desire more of the immature golden eagle. And right now, we just don't have the supply that comes into the repository to fill the demand of the applications. We have three staff members that are dedicated to the Eagle program, and we have six volunteers to take in all those orders.
All right, thanks for that. And again, if you'd like to ask a question to the folks on the line, you can give us a call, 1-800-99-NATIVE. And Steve, I understand that there have been recent developments in the past year or past 2 years on, you know, obtaining feathers. Is there anything you'd like to share with us on what has changed?
Sure. And most of it relates to the National Eagle Repository and their distribution processes. We, as Colleen mentioned, had a fair amount of frustration across the country with the wait times for filling orders. We wanted to streamline or make our repository operations as efficient and effective as we possibly could, so we wanted to change how we did business. We did a national consultation. It took almost 2 years, five in-person consultation meetings around the country, telephone consultations. We accepted written comments. We went to NCAI in Sacramento and accepted comments from lots of tribal leaders. And eventually, we, based on those comments, made decisions on how to hopefully decrease wait times for applicants and also make the application procedure a little less painful. What we came out with in the end is we decided, based on the comments, to restrict Native American inmates to one order from the repository. What we were experiencing from some inmates was back-to-back-to-back-to-back reorders, sometimes a dozen or more, and each order that we filled was the maximum amount that their institution allowed. So they were constituting over half of our loose feather orders, Native American inmates. So overwhelming, I guess, comments from the tribes that they wanted to restrict inmates to one order. We did that. Some of the other things that we did are we updated the website with, I guess, some nice high-resolution photos so applicants have a better understanding of exactly what type of feather they're applying for or what type of feathers, whether it's bald eagles or golden eagles, immature or mature. And also, we are in the process of developing an online application so applicants don't have to, you know, fill out a hard paper copy and send it in, and we don't have to keep processing hard paper copies. We'll have an online application here fairly soon. Hopefully this year is what we're shooting for.
And Steve, you mentioned inmates requesting this. Is there any reason or do you know why there are so many requests for inmates to have eagle feathers?
You know, I think a lot of that would be speculation on my part, but I'm willing to go out on a limb and speculate some of it. I think what many inmates were probably doing is getting those orders, then either transferring them to other people in the prison, or as often as not, probably more often than not, sending them back to other members of their family, their friends, or possibly doing something else with them that would be illegal. But in any event, they weren't keeping them themselves. They were transferring them or doing something with them where it went to someone else.
All right. Thanks for that, Stephen. And again, if you have questions, call us right now, 1-800-99-NATIVE. And Steve, you know, hearing about this, that, you know, the law says this, and when it comes to enforcement, how heavy is that enforcement?
It in my mind, well, I guess in this region, the Northern Rocky Mountain region, this is kind of how we focus our work. We have roughly 20 to 27 field agents. We have 8 states to cover. We have lots and lots and lots of priorities. Protecting eagles is one of many different priorities, to put it in context. Within that subset of protecting eagles, there are lots of different things that kill eagles. We have electrocutions. We have poisoning. We have incidental snaring to trapping. We have vehicle strikes. We have wind power. We have shooting. So there's lots of things that kill eagles. We focus our efforts on those impacts that are having the biggest negative population impact on eagles. So industrial take is a big focus of ours, whether it's electrocutions or wind powers or poisonings in some cases. We also focus on the illegal commercialization of eagles. So if there is illegal take involved, that's a priority to work. And by take, I typically mean killing. Or if there's illegal sale or purchase or barter or trade involved, those are also priorities for us to investigate. Some of the other circumstances that were mentioned a little earlier on the show, possession with no commercialization involved. Like I said before, we have lots and lots and lots of work to do. That is not in our highest or high priority of work to get done. So typically, we won't actively go out and work just possession cases. We do have a fair number of complaints that come in from federally recognized tribal members of why aren't we looking at one person or another person for possessing eagle feathers when they're not an enrolled member of a federally recognized tribe. So we do get complaints, but like I said before, we have lots of different priorities that typically come above working just possession cases.
All right. Thanks for that, Steve. Again, phone lines are open. What do you think about this? Give us a call, 1-800-99-NATIVE. That's also 1-800-996-2848. And what do you think about the process of obtaining eagle feathers or parts? Do you think it's a fair process? Do you feel people are left out? Give us a call. We want to know what you think, Native America, 1-800-996-2848. Again, you can call in anonymously to 1-800-996-2848 is the number. And Steve, while we're talking about enforcing this, what are some of the fines if somebody is caught violating the law?
Well, it all depends what the violation is, and it also would depend on whether the Department of Justice feels it's a serious enough crime to warrant formal federal prosecution. We could take some of the, I guess, more egregious crimes of, we'll start with shooting and selling eagles. That's typically taken very seriously. And I have seen jail time for those transactions. It would be a felony for the illegal take of eagles on the second time it occurs. The Bald and Golden Eagle Protection Act, it's a misdemeanor for the first offense and a felony for the second offense. So if someone is shooting many eagles, the second bird and further are theoretically felonies. So I have seen prosecutions where individuals will get jail time for that and a significant fine. For other violations that might involve industrial take, I've seen penalties, whether it's the electrical distribution industry or the wind power industry, for egregious violations, I have seen penalties up in the millions of dollars. So these are viewed fairly seriously, the more egregious violations. For some of the lesser violations, we have authority to issue tickets. And tickets, the amount of it is set by the local district, judicial district, in which that ticket's written. So typically it's, you know, a few hundred dollars up to $500 or something. That would be used for much lesser offenses. But if there's illegal commercialization involved or industrial take, we typically don't issue tickets. We take those to the Department of Justice, and they make the decision on whether to formally prosecute or not.
All right. Thanks for that, Steve. Let's go ahead and take a call. Again, if you want to join the quest, join the hour, 1-800-996-2848. Let's bring in Douglas in Albuquerque, New Mexico, tuned in on KUNM. Douglas, you have a question for us.
Yes. So if I'm backpacking out in the wilderness and I find an eagle, is there someone I should report that to so that feathers can be taken?
All right. Thanks for that, Douglas. Let's go ahead and turn this one over to Colleen.
Well, I think if you're out and you find an eagle, it would probably be best to contact the local authorities there, the special agent that might be in that area. And then typically how the repository receives them are from either state or federal agents or rehabbers if the animal has perished in their care. And then it comes to the repository, and it's processed through the repository and then shipped out to the applicants per according to what their need is.
All right. Thank you for that. Douglas, any more thoughts?
Who's an agent? I mean, I'm typically thinking of, you know, a department or something like that. What do you mean by agent?
Colleen?
So either, I'm not sure what state you're in, but you can talk to the Game and Fish. So they'll have a local law enforcement officer, or the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service will have an agent, a special agent that can come and help you out. So it's just a law enforcement individual. So if you're on a refuge, it would be a refuge officer. If you're not on any federal land, then just contact the local Game and Fish.
All right. Thank you for your call, Douglas. Again, phone lines are open, 1-800-996-2848. And Colleen, are there any numbers you'd like to share with our listening audience in case they want to connect you or might have more questions? Where should they go?
Well, our number here is 303-287-2110. And I would also encourage your listeners to look at the website, and that's www.fws.gov/eagle repository. I think you can contact us through either way, whatever's more convenient for them.
All right. Thanks for that, Colleen. And we'll get some links up on our website, too. If you are looking for more information, just visit us online. NativeAmericaCalling.com is where you find us, too. You can also send us a tweet or hit us up on Facebook. We are inviting you to the conversation today. You are listening to Native America Calling, and we're talking about eagle feathers and who can and can have them. Federal law says that only members of federally recognized tribes can possess eagle feathers and parts. What do you think about that? Does this law affect you? We want to hear from you. Call us right now, 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. And we have folks on the line who can answer your questions, but we do want to hear the tribal perspective. Does everybody agree with the laws? What do you think? Call us right now, 1-800-996-2848. We're going to continue our discussion on eagle feathers and parts and who has the right to have them right after our short break. Hang tight. We're going to hear what is coming up tomorrow here on our electronic talking circle, and we'll be right back. Millions of miles of oil and gas pipelines exist in the U.S. On the next Native America Calling, we'll take a closer look at proposed and existing pipelines and tribes' attitudes towards them. Just how safe are pipelines for transporting oil and gas? What are the alternatives for transporting resources if not through a pipeline? And are they any safer?
Hey! Support by Catching the Dream, offering scholarships up to $5,000 to Native American college students. Students can attend any accredited college in the United States. The fall deadline for Catching the Dream is April 15, 2015. Online application is at catchingthedream.org, and you can get more information by calling 505-262-2351. You may send us your essay in advance for critique.
Welcome back to Native America Calling. I'm Tara Gatewood from Mesleta Pueblo, and today we are talking about eagle feathers and who can and can have them. Again, federal law prevents anyone not from a federally recognized tribe from possessing eagle feathers. This also leaves out a large population of natives from state-recognized tribes, as well as natives who have native heritage or maybe even mixed heritage but are not on the rolls. If you are one of those folks, what do you think about the law saying you can't have eagle feathers? Call us right now, 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. And if you were maybe at some of the listening sessions that were mentioned in the first half and put your input in and feel that the laws do represent what Native America feels about obtaining eagle feathers and parts, we want to hear from you too. Tell us what you're thinking, 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. Let's go ahead and add another voice to our hour today. Joining us from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania is DeShane Stokes, and he is a writer and progressive activist, and he is Lakota. Welcome back to Native America Calling, DeShane.
Hi, Tara. Thank you.
And say your name for me, please.
DeShane.
Sorry about that. Yeah. DeShane, welcome back. And, you know, we wanted to make sure that we gave folks a chance who work in the regulations department and enforce some of these laws and also help natives obtain feathers and eagle parts, you know, to really share, you know, what is on the books and you know, how they are helping natives connect with this. I also understand that you watch this topic very carefully and have, you know, opinions on the system. So, DeShane, go ahead and start us off. What do you think about the current laws in place?
Well, to begin, I think it's great that we have the law in place in order to try to help protect eagle populations. I think that's incredibly important. But a lot of people really don't understand how problematic the law is. And that really comes to the fore when you start talking about state-recognized tribes. I mean, if you look back historically, there's been falsification of state records, something that's been called paper genocide, that's artificially decreased the true number of indigenous people in the United States and actually terminated the official existence of many tribes. So there's, when we start talking about who can actually have eagle feathers and who's not allowed to have them, I mean, we really don't, when they have these conversations, but they don't really talk about all the problems that are inherent in the laws and how they were created.
All right. And DeShane, you know, when it comes to state recognized tribes and we just talk about connecting to culture, you know, what is the conflict when it comes to the laws?
Well, the law, it's unconstitutional. I mean, the First Amendment says that they won't make a law about religion. And yet here is a law that is very facially about religion and it affects people's religious freedom. So right off the bat, you can very much question whether or not this is something that's really constitutional. And part of that argument, of course, is based on this idea of compelling interest and trying to protect trying to protect eagle populations. But the courts have actually shown like this really isn't advancing a compelling interest, and even advancing changes in the law wouldn't necessarily harm eagle populations. So it really raises the question like why is this law in effect against state recognized tribes?
All right. And DeShane, in your research, has anybody stood in court and said this is a violation of my right to express my religion the way I want to?
Yeah, there's actually been a number of cases over the years. Perhaps most recently is Robert Soto. He is a Lipan Apache, which is a state-recognized tribe in Texas, I believe. And he actually had his feathers confiscated at a powwow in 2006. And, of course, because he stayed recognized, he couldn't get an eagle permit. And so He's actually still in a legal battle for his fetters today. And interestingly about this, the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals ruled just this last August that the U.S. government had failed to prove that by denying Robert Soto and other members of state-recognized tribes that they were advancing any government compelling interest. So they're saying, like, part of the government's argument here is really, you know, without basis. And, of course, the case is still something that's ongoing, so we're really going to be waiting to see, you know, what happens.
Sure. A lot of people have their eye out on that one. And if you have any thoughts to add to the hour, call us right now, 1-800-99-NATIVE. Let's go ahead and bring in a caller. We have John on the line in Spokane, Washington, tuned in on KSFC. John, welcome to the hour. And what are you thinking?
Thank you. Are you able to hear me right now pretty good?
Yeah, you sound loud and clear.
Okay. Robert Soto is a very good friend of mine. And I'm pretty familiar with this case from the very beginning. My question is I've read the 1978-79 law, and unless there's been a change, or it's my understanding, the wording is any Indian of any tribe may possess. Is that still true?
All right. Hold tight on that one. Deshane, any thoughts on that?
What he's referring, there's been some disagreement about whether it should be limited to federal tribes or state tribes. It was actually in, I believe, Mr. Soto's case that they brought up that point that the gentleman was just making, that the decision to say, hey, this is just about state tribes, or excuse me, that this is just for federal tribes is sort of erroneous. So where that's going to go from here, though, is open to question.
All right. I want to go ahead and bring in a special agent in charge for the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Services Office of Law Enforcement, Steve Oberholzer, who's on the line with us today. Steve, I'm welcoming you back into the second half. And is there anything you'd like to add, providing any more information for our caller, John?
I think another thing that might be referring to, or he might be referring to, is there was a policy called the Morton Policy, set up by the Secretary of the Interior back in 1975. As you said at the beginning of the show, that has been updated or clarified over the past about 2 years ago by the Department of Justice, who adopted that policy, and also Fish and Wildlife Service Office of Law Enforcement, who adopted the Department of Justice's interpretation, and that clarified the department's policy to only apply to members of federally recognized tribes. So prior to that, the original policy was somewhat ambiguous, whether it applied to all American Indians, which was one term in there, or Native Americans, which was another term in there. The new policy has been clarified by both Departments of Justice and Interior to only apply the exemption for possession of eagle feathers and migratory bird feathers to members of federally recognized tribes.
All right. John, any more questions?
No, it pretty well cleared up. I appreciate and thank you for letting me come on the air.
All right. Thank you for your call, John. Again, if you'd like to join the hour, 1-800-99-NATIVE. Let's go ahead and take another call coming to us out of Native America. Let's go ahead and bring in Steve, who's in Spokane, Washington, tuned in on KSFC. Steve, welcome to the hour. And what are you wondering about?
Thank you. I was curious to find out if a member of a recognized tribe can gift an eagle feather to someone.
All right. Great question, Steve. Hang tight. Steve, from coming to us, go ahead and Mr. Oberholzer, answer that one for us.
Yes, they can, as long as the person receiving it is a member of a federally recognized tribe. And by gifting, we mean no compensation of any type. It's solely a gift and not for services or other items.
All right. Steve, any more questions?
So the recipient of the gift has to be a native also?
Correct. A member of a federally recognized tribe.
All right. Steve, thank you for your call. And DeShane, I wanted to get your take on that, that, you know, nothing can be given in exchange for that. I've heard a lot of people talking about this. You know, when you receive something, a lot of times it is tradition and custom to give back. With the way the law reads, does that ever provide or does that ever create any controversy?
I'm really not sure offhand. It definitely could, because sometimes, like, if you're familiar with how feathers are sometimes exchanged or traded between people, sometimes people will trade, you know, a number of hawk feathers for an eagle feather, or a full hawk for, like, an eagle wing, or, you know, different, you know, variations on this. So there is an element of trading even between native people. And, of course, like you mentioned, like, this, it raises a lot of problems if they start bringing in money involved into this. Of course, that's not supposed, money is never supposed to exchange hands, but sometimes it might.
All right. And Steve, I wanted to know, has this ever created conflict, you know, in enforcing the law when people are, you know, what they say are following their customs?
Well, I can't point to specific examples, but you can picture the whole gradient of different transactions that occur. Back to our enforcement priorities, what we really focus on is where there's illegal take and illegal commercialization involved. I'm merely stating what the law prohibits, and that would include trade and barter. But what our agents, our special agents, are really focusing on for the limited number of cases we do work is where there's some significant impact to populations or to local populations because there's illegal take and illegal commercialization involved.
All right. Thank you for that. Let's take another caller. We are bringing in anonymous caller on line 5 today. Let's go ahead and hear. I understand they have a question. Caller, you are on air.
Good afternoon. Thanks for taking my call. See, I've got a question, actually a couple of questions, and I've been having or listening to some of those elements being touched on throughout some other questions, but one of my main questions is, I've always been raised throughout my family where we've earned and our feathers are very, very sacred to us, and my children understand that, my grandchildren understand that, but it's very, very frustrating when we go to ceremonies and we go to powwows and we know and understand what they have gone through to earn these feathers, but yet, your guests have stated very clearly that only federally recognized members of Native American tribes are able to possess these. But when you go to these ceremonies or any particular ceremonies or powwows where the public is welcome, you see that that is not the case. And my frustration, my question is, why is that not a priority? He's stated, one of your guests has stated, well, what we make a priority is the fact that we're looking for the bartering or the actual taking, but it had to start somewhere. So why are we not going up and correcting that and making an example of some of these individuals that are possessing them and even the people that are gifting them or wherever they're getting them? But it doesn't happen. You still see them running around, playing Native American and wearing these feathers like they have the right to earn them. I mean, like they have the right to possess them.
All right, caller, hold tight. I want to give Steve a chance to go ahead and share some thoughts. Go ahead, Steve.
Sure. And when I speak of our priorities, to put it in context, we work with the states on big impacts to their big game populations from illegal guiding or other types of illegal take. We have endangered species work, migratory bird work, eagle work, import and export smuggling. So we have lots of different things that our special agents, who are criminal investigators, are doing with their time. So what we really try and focus on is those activities that are having negative impacts on federally or state protected species. So that is solely the basis of our priorities, not that we don't view the importance of eagle feathers to Native Americans, including state-recognized tribes. I certainly personally don't underestimate the importance of feathers to anyone. I also have seen feathers that appear to be possessed for no apparent reasons by non-Indians or others. So I guess I understand and appreciate your frustration. I wish I had lots more criminal investigators under my authority to get a lot more work done, but I have to draw the line somewhere with priorities, and that's typically based on what conservation impact can we have for the limited amount of work that we can get done.
All right. Thanks, Steve and caller, for your call. Again, if you want to join us, 1-800-99-NATIVE. You can also send us a tweet. Our handle is at 1-800-99-NATIVE. Let's bring in another caller. We have an anonymous caller in Albuquerque, New Mexico, tuned in on KUNM. Caller, go ahead. You are on air.
Good afternoon. I have a comment to the previous speaker. I just kind of took the words out of my mouth, but I had worked here in Albuquerque at the State Fair at a rodeo circuit about 14 years ago, and I noticed a lot of the rodeo participants were wearing eagle feathers in their hats and also migratory hawk feathers in their hats. And I went and made a complaint to Game and Fish and to see if anything could be done about it. Next day, nothing hadn't happened, so I went to the federal level. I have a phone number here in Albuquerque where I get my permits. I made that comment too. Nothing has been done. But it seems that we're being Native American, we're being regulated all the time on the possession of Native feathers for religious reasons, but nobody goes out to check these rodeos or other non-Natives wearing feathers. And something has to be done because we're always being regulated, constantly being watched. And that's my comment for today. Thank you very much.
All right, caller, thank you for your call. I want to bring in another. We have Kenneth in Pine Ridge, South Dakota, tuned in on KILI. Kenneth, go ahead, join the hour.
Well, the concern I had was a traditional dancer, you know, the buffalo is already made of feathers, eagle feathers, living in the state that doesn't recognize his tribal identification card. And we also have ceremonies at college graduation where we give out plumes and feathers to the graduates who may not be a registered member of an Indian tribe. Are those laws going to be adjusted for those things?
All right, Kenneth, great question. Steve, we're going to turn that to you.
I wish I could answer it. I have absolutely no authority or control over amendment of laws. So I can't answer whether or not those laws are going to be adjusted. I do know, and that the gifting of feathers to people who are graduating, typically from high school, is very important. So we know about it. Once again, we have priorities for the work we do, but I can't comment on whether or not laws are going to be changed.
Sure. Steve, we understand. Colleen, is there anything you would like to add?
No, not to that conversation.
Okay, thanks for that. Again, you can reach out to us, 1-800-99-NATIVE. That's also 1-800-996-2848. And Deshane, earlier you mentioned paper genocide. When we take a look at these laws concerning eagle feathers, you know, we're talking about enrollment. Some would even say we're also talking about blood quantum to be an enrolled member. Any thoughts on how the discussion quickly turns to maybe even accepting the law? Is there another conversation you think we should also be having?
Well, I think we really should be talking about how to change the law so that it can protect not only the eagle populations, but also the interests of both federal and state recognized tribes. Now, something that people don't often hear about is, you know, there are some serious problems with this law. I mean, in a court case, U.S. versus Friday, this is from 2006, the court found, and I quote, the present application of the permitting process is not the least restrictive means of doing so. And although the government professes respect and accommodation of the religious practices of Native Americans, its actions show callous indifference to such practices. It is clear to this court that the government has no intention of accommodating the religious beliefs of Native Americans if Native Americans accept on its own terms and in its own good time. And there's a number of other court cases where they find similar things like that. and yet this law remains in place. And I wonder, like, why is that the case? Why aren't more people getting up and saying something about this so we can get this thing changed so we can protect everyone's interests as best we can? Because the current law certainly isn't doing it.
All right. And Deshane, personally, when you think about this and you think of your own story, how does the law affect you?
Well, I know people who have had their homes searched by federal agents, and it wasn't because they weren't Native. I know a woman, she is an elder, and she is, what she went through was amazing. I mean, she's a full-blood Santee Dakota, and yet federal agents came knocking on her door and searched her home because someone reported her as allegedly having eagle feathers. You know, she didn't happen to have them, but, you know, it's mind-boggling that they go around and start harassing old elders like this who are just trying to live their lives. And it's nothing to do with whether or not they're indigenous or not, or whether or not they're Lakota or Native American or what tribe they are. It's just whether or not they have that piece of paper. And I have to wonder, like, is that what the Founding Fathers really imagined for our country when they wrote the First Amendment? They say, like, oh, we're going to have an amendment about religious freedom, but only if. And I don't think that's anything that they had in mind when they were thinking about these things.
All right. Thanks for that, Deshane. I got one more question we want to throw into the mix. Steve, this question came to us from a non-Native caller who couldn't stay on the line. They wanted to know if eagle feathers, if something just lands on their property, especially in Alaska, are they allowed to have it? Steve, can you answer that for us?
Sure. One more time. Yes, if they are a member of a federally recognized tribe or an Alaska Native village, which would be one of the same. The new policy did allow or expand into, I think, something that is generally considered less restrictive than the prior one, and that is that members are allowed to collect naturally molted or fallen feathers from migratory birds, including eagles. So, yes, if a feather is found somewhere and there's no evidence of foul play or a carcass right on it, then those can be lawfully collected by members of federally recognized tribes. And you find that all over Alaska on the beaches. There's lots and lots of feathers.
All right. Thanks for that, Steve. Let's go ahead and bring back Chairman Gerald Gray to the line. He is the chairman of the Little Shell Tribe. And Chairman Gray, I wanted to give you a moment. We've covered a lot of information today, heard from different voices. Is there anything that you're really concerned with or things that you'd like to put out there as we consider how this law connects to Native America?
Sure. I think, first of all, it's just way too easy for the federal government to constantly take the easy route and always just include federally recognized tribes and enrolled members of those. I think this law needs to be reconsidered, you know, re-looked at, because it is stepping on the religious freedoms that we have as tribal members, even including dancers. You know, we all dance, so when we're wearing these eagle feathers, I guess we're all breaking the law now. I think the federal government really needs to put it back into the hands of each state and let them determine which tribe should be able to obtain those eagle feathers.
All right. Thanks for that, Chairman. And Deshane, anything that you'd like to leave us with?
I'd like to leave with a quote from Science versus Interior 2001. And in that, the court found, and I quote, "It appears that the present permit system is designed not to enhance the government's position with federally recognized tribes. The present permit system appears designed to minimize the work Congress handed the agency." And here we're talking about the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. So I think we really need to change this.
And what you just read, Deshane, what does that say to you?
It says that the system is broken. They have some good ideas, and they have some good things in place. We need to build on those and make them even better. We can change it so that it will help federal tribes, so it will help state tribes, and so that we can also protect eagles. We can do all of this. We just have to have the courage to act on this.
All right. Thanks for that, Deshane. And Steve, is there anything you'd like to leave us with as we consider what's been put on the table today?
Sure, and I'll try and make it very quick. I think the basis for a lot of this discussion is we have a limited number of eagles that come to the repository, basically anywhere from 2,500 to 3,000 eagles a year. We fill roughly 4,000 orders a year. Even that being said, for a whole immature golden eagle, the wait time can be up to 5 years just because we don't have enough of them to fill all the orders that come in or the request. So that is really the balancing act that I believe the federal government is trying to do. They're trying to balance eagle conservation with a limited supply and our unique government-to-government relationship with federally recognized tribes. And that is why that's the only groups of individuals that we will transmit eagles out to. We received applications from state-recognized tribal members. We received them from non-Indians, and we put them in the pile, too. So I guess I wouldn't limit the conversation to just state-recognized and federally recognized tribal members wanting eagle feathers. It's lots of other people, too.
All right. Thanks for that. And Colleen, got a moment. Anything you'd like to put out there, even the website?
I really appreciate the time. We are always actually looking for volunteers. So if any of your listeners are interested in coming and helping out at the Eagle Repository, we would welcome the chance to talk with them further.
All right. Thank you for that. And we have reached the end of the hour today. I want to thank all the folks whom we heard from, including our callers. And again, if there is more to cover on this that you'd like us to look more into, please do send us an email. Send it to comments@NativeAmericaCalling.com. Thanks to our guests, Gerald Gray, Colleen Schaefer, Stephen Oberhoser, and DeShane Stokes. Thank you for joining us. We will be back again with more from our electronic talking circle. Again, visit us at NativeAmericaCalling.com. Thanks to our crew, Monica Brain, Andy Murphy, Stephen Emmons, also Antonia Gonzalez with National Native News. I'm Tara Gatewood, your host and producer, and we appreciate all your calls each weekday. And again, if there is something you'd like to know more about in Native America, send us an email, comments@NativeAmericaCalling.com.
February is Children's Dental Health Month. It's important to begin cleaning your baby's teeth as soon as they appear. And that means it's also time for your baby to visit the dentist. Cavities are 100% preventable, and you can help prevent them by brushing your kid's teeth daily and by limiting sugary snacks and sodas. Remember to call your dental clinic today to make an appointment for your child. This message brought to you by Native American Professional Parent Resources.
Sacred Wind Communications education nonprofit, Sacred Wind Community Connect, is a proud sponsor of this program. Sacred Wind provides high school and college scholarships and internet training to areas of the Navajo Nation and Pueblo of Laguna in New Mexico, where the parent company provides voice and broadband services. Sacred Wind believes that broadband technologies can reinforce Native cultures and offer other opportunities for self-determination. For more information, log on to sacredwindcommunications.com. Native America Calling is produced in the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kiwanik Broadcast Corporation, a Native nonprofit media organization located in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, the McCune Charitable Foundation, and the Ford Foundation. Music is provided by Brent Michael Davids. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.